Good afternoon. It's Rob. Who's on?
Hey, Rob. Abraham and Anthony are on.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
Welcome. Welcome. I'm awesome. Thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Glad to hear it. Doing well, thanks.
Good, good. So, that's good. What's on your mind? What's happening? Bring me up to date.
Okay. I think most excitedly, Anthony is making some progress with a very large prospect. Well, I don't know how big she is, but with a prospect with a lot of money, and they're trying to set up a meeting to present the financial plan, and he wants to bring me in on that meeting. She has north of $50 million. Not all of it liquid, but still about $7 million liquid, and it's just sitting in the bank. So we'll be talking about what else we could be doing with that money for her.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and to his credit, he's really stayed persistent without being obnoxious. This lady, he's been working with her for well over a year, and the time is finally right, and she finally has some urgency about meeting. So it looks promising.
Great.
Yep. So that's going on. In terms of an update, I have met with the development or with somebody from the United Way, and got myself an invitation to attend the audit committee meeting. The next meeting is in early January, which I think will be a good opportunity because it's they basically audit the grants, the recipients of the grants that they give out to make sure that the organizations that they partner with are doing, generating the results with the money that we give.
Yep.
And so my client got me into this, and she's a CPA, and the audit committee is almost entirely CPAs. So I think it'll be a great opportunity, rather than getting involved with, for example, the endowment committee or the investments committee, which, you know, is a bunch of FAs who get around and sit around and talk about whether we should have 5% or 7% international stock in the portfolio.
Right. And those CPAs could all be centers of influence. They may be in CPA firms, but they also could be controllers of corporations, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I do have a legitimate interest in making sure money is properly spent and results ROI is being generated. It's not just trying to cozy up with a bunch of CPAs, but it does seem like that would be a good way to get involved.
And it's different. I've never had anybody do what you're doing.
Yeah. So. Well, my client has been on the audit committee for many, many years, and she said, you know, she never got any business out of it, but that's because it's all other CPAs on the audit committee.
Right.
You know, and they're not going to refer her a case. But that's what my ears picked up, perked up rather.
Yeah. Perfect.
And then beyond that, I attended one of the Saturday training sessions for this Breakthrough Miami, which is the group that Anthony hooked me up with, and
right.
Just came away from that very, very impressed with what they do. Met some of the scholars and the students and the participants, and really came away inspired and ready to get involved with that.
Wow, great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Now, it's been frustrating that there have been very, they had a lot of enthusiasm at first, but it seems like they've dropped the ball repeatedly on getting me a meeting with the other board of directors to discuss next steps and to discuss me getting on the board. So, I've stayed persistent. I haven't been discouraged, but it is, it is concerning when, it's that hard just to get on a board.
Well, one of the things you're going to discover is that there's opportunities for productivity increases in these organizations. They're
sure.
They're volunteer, but that doesn't mean they have to be run badly.
Right.
And what you'll find is that when you look under the covers, most of them aren't really run that efficient, you know.
Yeah.
And so both, you know, from an economic point of view and money spent and balancing budgets and things like that, they're poor. And then especially in the arts, you'll see in the arts, they just really don't understand how to run a business. And then with the regular charity, it's the same thing. They overestimate what they're going to spend and they underestimate what they're going to raise. And, you know, they're always running around, and not getting an appointment with a potential donor is, you know, that's about as ridiculous as it could be. Right. I mean, you want to make a good impression. So I would tell you the very first thing you should do in getting there is to review their onboarding process.
Mm-hmm. Okay? That makes good.
Yeah. So, you know, just say, hey, look, you know, my experience, wonderful group of people, but I don't think we're putting our best foot forward. So I'd like to volunteer to kind of review our onboarding experience and make sure that when we get a good candidate, we put our best foot forward. My guess is if we're doing this, you know, with potential board members, there's opportunities to improve the process for all people interested in giving, you know. So let's, you know, that's what I'd like to work on.
That sounds good. I suspect the answer would be what onboarding process?
Well, that's right. They don't even understand onboarding, you know, and that's the sort of thing that you can bring a value to them as a board member is to help the director to, you know, directors aren't necessarily good fundraisers or they don't even oftentimes aren't even very particularly good at running organizations. So they, mm-hmm. you know, they just, they go into it because it's something they believe in and they want to give back and they think that, and they're still a social worker, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, this lady that Anthony hooked me up with, and I'm not saying that just because he's sitting here, is tremendously dynamic and impressive. So, you know, there may be some, it may have just been a string of bad luck and missed, you know, scheduling issues, but it also could be that there is some disconnect, you know, at the rank and file level.
Well, that's right. And there, you know, we always say there are no coincidences. Things are just, you know, you smell it, that's a fire. Okay. So,
yeah.
And you know, if it proves you wrong, at least you looked into it and proved them correct. But most of the time you'd
right.
be correct to believe that there's a fire there.
So beyond that, my mastermind group has really broken down. It has not yet gotten off the ground. I mean, we had one meeting with two other guys, one of which, you know, was super on board conceptually, but has just been not great at, you know, staying interested. I mean, I think he's just not real responsive around, you know, meetings and bringing people. And, you know, I think he's got a lot of other stuff he's focusing on. He's a realtor. And he's a little bit all over the place. And, you know, if a listing comes up, he's going to grab it, not go to, you know, some lunch meeting. The other guy, I mean, conceptually, yeah, but then, you know, it seems like he's kind of not been real responsive either. So maybe these are the people to really partner with
Is the time an issue?
Well, I mean, what happened was we had our meeting in our first meeting in August, and then September, the second meeting was right around when we had a hurricane threatening, so that pushed that off the agenda. I mean, it was literally going to be as the hurricane was scheduled to make landfall. So then October was, you know, yeah, we got to get that ramped up. And, you know, I mean, a lot of it, partially to be completely candid or self, you know, assessing, I've not made it a real high priority either. So, you know, that's kind of where things stand.
Are you doing a dinner or a lunch or a breakfast?
Well, I'm more pushing for dinner, but both the other two guys are more interested in lunch. The one guy.
The only thing I'm telling you about lunch is it's easy to get something more important. It's like trying to work out at lunchtime.
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly right. So, I mean, that's kind of, I think, part of the stalemate, you know, is that when the other two guys are for whatever reason, more pushing for lunch, whereas I'm pushing for dinner. So, I mean, maybe these just aren't the right two people to be working with.
Yeah, that, I mean, you got to be patient with this stuff. It really, it takes effort and time, and it's kind of like playing tennis. You know, you gotta actually get out on the court and play and have fun. I mean, you can't expect them to think this is a great idea until they've experienced it. So
yeah, I mean, you know, it did lead to this guy. One of the guys taking me to a Miami Hurricanes game in his suites, his luxury, it's not a suite, but a seats. And that's led to some other stuff. I'm trying to sell an apartment, so I gave the listing to him. And I do think that, you know, he and I have a stronger relationship as a result of all this. So, you know, I the good stuff is happening, even if it's not looking the way I necessarily think it has to look.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, you can take it in a different direction and just meet with him. If you think he's going to be a good center of influence but not a good guy for this, then you just keep meeting with him monthly on something that works for both of you, you know, a breakfast, a lunch, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then just move on to try and find another guy that is more interested in this sort of thing. They really have to understand what it is. You know, it's really a group of friends getting together and having dinner and enjoying each other and sharing their kind of almost the innermost knowledge of what it is that you do.
And
so you talk about your average client size and what kind of clients you want and what your problems are and who you're looking to hire and what, you know, where you want to be in 5 years. And so the idea of each meeting is everybody brings a good idea and everybody brings a problem. And then you focus on one of the guys to spend the second hour of the meeting going through their own personal business situation,
right?
And really kind of being in the hot seat and having everybody act as consultants to help them fix their issues.
That sounds good.
I mean, it's a great thing. It works. So read up on them. I mean, you know, there's Google mastermind groups. You'll read a lot about them, but that seems to be the big thing is to get the commitment, is to have them really understand it and then get the commitment and say, you know, come hell or high water, we're going to meet once a month for the next 6 months, and then we'll sundown it. If we don't like what we're doing, we'll bag it. So we'll just do this for 6 months and see if it makes sense for all of us. And that's a good way to get them into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes good sense.
Then
what do you
don't see it. It's going forever either, you know?
Yeah, for sure. What do you think about holiday gifts for clients?
Well, I love the idea of bringing your enthusiastically endorsed group together for a cocktail party or recognition opportunity for them to meet each other and for you to network and become a connector. I really love this idea of kind of introducing yourself as a connector. So what do you do? I'm kind of a connector. I help people solve problems. Yeah, I'm in the financial services industry, and that's what I do. I manage money, and I do other things. But what I love is being a connector and solving whatever problems people have. And so I've got this network of enthusiastically endorsed professionals that we work together to help each other and to help others in the community to solve whatever problems they have.
That
they'd be like,
good.
Wow, that's amazing, you know? But you need to put the group together, and then you need to meet. And the holidays is always a great time to bring people together, right? Everybody wants to get together, and you're kind of in that festive mood. And, you know, you take them to the Nutcracker, or you take them to some, you know, some event that is kind of community driven, and you kind of host it and put them all together, and they all of a sudden realize, damn, Abe's got a hell of a network here. This is amazing. Right. So that, you know, even if you just start planning it now for next year, great idea. Holiday gifts. I think some places, you know, a little bit of it is expected. It's not going to be a deal breaker one way or the other. But, you know, I think, to be frank with you, I guess it is a little bit expected. I'd be a little disappointed if I didn't get a gift. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I see it. I actually put a lot of thought into the gifts I give, and have a spreadsheet where I keep track of what I give each person each year so that I know, and any response I've gotten from them.
Good idea.
Yeah. And I try and switch it up so that I'm not sending the same guy Harry and David pairs every year or a bottle of wine.
If you can, you know, I know it sounds crazy, but if you can do something that you create, it's even better. Okay. The guys that, you know, that make their own whatever and send it to their clients, it's a huge hit with them, and it doesn't cost much money. It's like if you, this sounds crazy, but if you made jam or something, and you know, and then you send that out. It's not expensive. It just took your time and effort, and, somehow if you could get somehow engaged in a process where you could claim that you did it, even if you did it with somebody else, would kind of be able to pass that test of caring enough to create something, and they see you as a little bit more of a, I don't know, a little bit more of a entrepreneur. And anyway, it's kind of nice. Personal.
Yeah, it is. My crazy ex-wife made jam one year and we gave that and put little stickers on the jars and all that, and people loved it.
Yeah, they would probably respond more to that than they would, you know, a $50 box of pears, you know, or whatever they cost today.
Probably about that. I do send Harry and David to some clients, but I try not to because I feel like it's kind of cliche.
I'm not the best guy probably to talk about what are the best gifts. It's just that Marcia and I remember certain gifts that we got, and you know, we kind of value those and cherish them and remember, you know, this guy was really good at he had good taste, you know, sent us beautiful things. So
that sounds,
you know,
good.
I saw a decanter. I mean, a lot of people have decanters, but I saw one that was kind of shaped like a goose, kind of, you know. It was very cool. It had a small, you know, fairly, you know, maybe a dollar size opening on one end, and then a very thin opening on the other, and it was sort of, it was really cool. And I thought, you know, I didn't think of it then, but I think of it now as, you know, that'd be a great gift for most people because they don't have them or they don't work well. They're just the old kind of decanters.
Sure.
And this thing looked pretty cool because you could pour from it easily. You know, it was sort of shaped like a decanter. You know, I mean, shaped like a pitcher. You know.
Yeah, I've seen stuff like that. Definitely.
Yeah, that might be a fun thing. And they'd remember that. You know, as compared to just a bottle of wine. So.
Yeah.
You know.
What'd you say?
I was reading something.
Let me bring Anthony into the conversation too. Make sure he's having an opportunity to ask her
sure.
any questions he has or provide any update. Is there anything on your mind?
No, I mean, just kind of piggybacking on what Abe's doing. Right now is kind of the first year that I'm going through a Christmas season, as an advisor. So I'm really just sending him, like holiday cards with a picture of the family.
Yep, nice.
Just for now, just to kind of make sure I at least send them something. And then, throughout maybe next year, the year after, I'll start worrying about, giving gifts when I make a little more money.
Yep, I understand.
Yeah. But, as far as my practice is concerned, things are certainly moving along. As Abe mentioned, we have that one prospect that we're trying to just get into the office. I think if we get her into the office, we can talk to her about the plan and how we think it would be best to invest her assets and move forward. I don't necessarily have any questions or anything at the moment. I'm really kind of just strumming along. I'm using, I admitted to you before, I don't use the full Supernova. I've been doing quarterly calls, and, clients have been responding pretty well. I give them the option to do monthly calls.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them don't choose to. I think there's two maybe that I have on a monthly call schedule, but the remainder really like the quarterly call schedule. Along with that, I'm trying to, if I've had communication with them for at least 6 months or so, try to somehow get my way in the door by asking an introduction question, an enthusiastically endorsed question, something to try and spark some sort of a marketing effort. So that's kind of what I'm doing now.
Yeah, just make sure that when you get a client like this particular one, you give her 12-4-2.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, if you got somebody with $500,000, they don't need it. But somebody with $5 million or $50 million, they definitely need it, okay? So, because there's a lot of moving parts. And you want to make sure that you're, we talk about the 24-month calendar. Abe, I don't know if you're using that or not using it, but the 24-month calendar is a terrific idea because it makes your calls interesting and clients look forward to the phone calls. Do you remember that, the 24-month calendar?
Yeah, for sure. And, it's something that I've struggled to really fully implement over the years. I've taken stabs at it, and it's just for whatever reasons fallen by the wayside.
Right. Okay. So one of the things that you guys can do for each other is create accountability and a reason for doing some of these things, because it works and it's better. But when you're just a sole proprietor and you have nobody checking up on you, anything that's more work, you kind of, skip, right? Even
right.
though it's a good idea and I'd be better off if I did it, but it's like working out, It's like, I'll skip today, So
right.
Make it a bilateral contract. You two sit down and figure out what's the best 24-month calendar, and then meet and talk about it every month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are we going to do this month and build the 24 months? Now, with new product introduction or service introduction, I always gave you guys 2 months. All right, so when you're doing required minimum distribution and tax selling, I also give you 2 months. November and December, I reserve for that. Some things like January, where you're going to be kind of the state of the economy and an outlook, economic outlook. You only need 1 month. You only need 1 month for that. But if you're going to introduce liability management and making sure that every client is optimizing their liability management, then you may take 2 months, because out of 100 people you talk to, 10 of them are going to want to do something, and that requires follow-up. So you might want to give yourself 2 months to begin and end a campaign like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So look in the workbook and you'll see the sample 24-month calendar. Start with that and then adjust for what you guys want to introduce.
Okay.
And you remember, anytime we're introducing a product or service, we always do more business. You know, even if it's, it doesn't matter. It could be anything, but you're introducing mortgages and liability management. A lot of people are going to want to do lines of credit, and they're going to want to do mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because you're talking about it. So it makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, that I agree. We'll do that definitely.
Yeah. And then going back to the enthusiastically endorsed list, that's a good one for both of you guys. You can check up on each other for that. Make sure that it's filled out for every client. You know who they're, because that's a great source of introductions for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's say there's 20 names on there. Everybody from, you know, the lawn guy to their cardiologist, you know, if it's the right big enough lawn company, they could make a lot of money, right? So you never know. And a cardiologist, of course, you want to meet him. If everybody's endorsing him, you know, maybe he's the guy that you want to send everybody to, but you need to meet him before you're going to send them to him. And then he'd be a great guy to bring to your holiday party. So just make sure it's filled out and everybody understands that to be endorsed by you and be the number one person on the list is a big deal. You're going to get a lot of introductions from it.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to this idea of being a connector, right? A kind of a professional
connector. Sure, absolutely.
So one of the things that I would do with each other is every week I would sit down and say, okay, how many people did you introduce this week? How many people did you connect?
Uh-huh.
All right, along with, you know, who are your prospects and how are you doing on those? How many people did you connect this week? Did you connect 10? Did you connect 30? How many? And the more people you connect, the more people you help, the more people you serve, the more connections you're going to get.
Well, we have been doing the weekly kickoff meeting, so we can certainly add that to the meeting agenda.
Yeah, it's the idea of the giving board versus, you know, just the game board. It's a game,
right.
but if you concentrate on giving, it's going to work. I'm just absolutely convinced of it.
Yeah, definitely.
And it kind of legitimizes, I mean, you say you're a connector, it sort of makes you, it gives you permission to do anything, right? I mean, it's kind of like you're allowed then to go anywhere and do anything and just meet people and connect them because that's what you do.
Right.
So you're never really doing it for yourself. You're always doing it for everybody else. So it kind of gives you a free pass to go anywhere and do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to that suite, your job is to connect people, to get to know them well enough that figure out what they need and then connect them to somebody rather than just meeting them.
Right.
Interesting, right? You got to know them pretty well to figure that out. So, you got an hour or an hour and a half while you're in a suite to chat it up with people. Can you, in that time, figure out something that they need and then connect them to it?
Yeah.
It'd be kind of fun. It'd be a challenge, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah. I really like that. I've kind of, you know, that's a little bit more of a nuance than I've taken on that. It's a little more aggressive. I like it.
Aggressively helpful?
Aggressively helpful, yeah. I like that. I'm going to write that down. Because we're always sort of afraid to be aggressive, right?
Sure.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah, because we're always hesitant to. We don't get to know people well enough. We don't get past their, you know, where are you from? Where, you know, where'd you go to school? And blah, blah, blah. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to get past that and get into some of the issues. And once they get into the issues, then you kind of start to, you know, I've got a guy, you know.
Right.
I've got a guy, right? I've got a guy. Or a gal,
yeah,
that can, you know, that can help you, right? And if you'd like it, I can introduce you. Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, let's arrange it. Boom. Now you've got your next step.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of closing for nothing or not even closing, you're really closing for something where you're helping them.
Sure.
And that's your charitable work. Your charitable work will always get you an okay from society because you're not doing it for yourself.
Right.
So you can be aggressive there too.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I there's been no breakthroughs in my coaching, in terms of anything really new. You know, the guys that I know, it's, you know, the same stuff is working. The centers of influence work, the niche marketing works. I there is something kind of fun. I've got a guy and a team, and they're like, I said, what's your optimum number of clients, you know, when we're determining our min and our max?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think it'd be 80 clients and 20 prospects. How does that sound? I said, that sounds pretty good, because we always talk about how many clients we want, but I never get anybody to commit to how many prospects they're going to keep. And I said, 20 is a good number. 50 is too many. 10 is probably not enough. At any one time, if you have 20 prospects, you could probably open out 10 clients a year out of that. And just keep kicking them out and keep opening them.
Right.
And then, you know, and it's sort of like, okay, here are my 80 folders for my clients, and here's my 20 folders for my prospects. I think if you had 20 folders where you were calling them every month, it would give you some rituals. And if you didn't have 20, then you know you got some work to do.
Mm-hmm.
How's that sound? Does that sound a little more structured and might give you some definition to what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Because it just gets too vague when we get into the prospecting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, you know, how many, you know, we don't talk about how many prospects do you have. We talk
right.
about using the pipeline tool, but let's make that part of what we do from now on. You know, my question will be, you know, how many clients do you have? How many prospects do you have?
Okay.
You know, and you know, if you fired a couple clients, great. If you brought in some clients, great. But you're at your max or you're not at your max. And then how many prospects do you have? And I think that's a really good question.
I agree.
Okay, so that'll be our homework.
So what about, for example, the couple I met at the wedding in New Orleans, they were interested. He's going to be retiring soon. They want to talk. They may have other assets available now. And he, He works for the public schools as a psychologist, but he also owns a karate school. We enrolled our kids in the karate school because we really liked him and heard good things about it. And so they've been going for a couple weeks now. So I see him, you know, pretty regularly if I'm the one that brings the kids to class. And his wife is a realtor, but she also kind of shows up at the school a lot. So we talked about meeting. She said probably in December when school's out of session would be a good time. And so far we have not gotten anything on the calendar yet. Is that a prospect or is that just a suspect?
That's a suspect. You haven't told me how much money they have.
I don't know. I haven't asked.
Right. So you need to qualify them first. So you qualify them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become a prospect.
Now, if she had had already told me how much they have and it was enough, would they be a prospect at that point?
Yes. So you've got to determine what your criteria is to be a prospect, right? So your
right.
criteria to be a prospect, in my mind, the one I always used was, I like them, they like me.
Mm-hmm.
They had the means to meet my minimum, and they're willing to act within a reasonable amount of time.
Okay.
So they're not a prospect if you're not going to have the money for 5 years, right?
Sure.
So they're a suspect, and they may stay on your suspect list, but they're not going to. So you've got to sit down and see if it's a fit, and that's what you tell them, you know, that this is,
right.
It's important that it be a good fit for both of us.
Right.
You know, we don't want to, we take on fairly complicated situations and clearly, you know, there's an expense associated with that. So we want to charge you the right amount for this. So we need to know what your situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find out and then you tell them that you'll help them, but it may not be you that ends up being their financial advisor.
Right.
So being a connector, you then take them and connect them to somebody whose minimum would take care of them that you respect. And, you know, whether it be Anthony or it be somebody else, but they would, they'd be a good person, you know, for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you connect them. And that's what you tell them. Say, you know, it may not be a good fit for our group, but it, you know, I'll be happy to meet with you and help you figure out your next step.
Okay.
Okay.
So you don't wait until the first meeting to get into all that. You would bring that up on the phone.
I would try to. Yeah, I would. I would.
On the phone.
Yeah, I would try and I'd try and do that because what if they say they have $500,000?
Right.
Okay. And that would be disappointing for them and disappointing for you, and it would just, you know, it becomes uncomfortable. It'd be more important to be uncomfortable on the phone than in person.
Sure.
And you can help them. You can take care of them. You can meet them, have them introduced to somebody that will help them.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. It's like asking if they already have a relationship, you know, with Morgan Stanley. Those are questions
right.
you got to get out of the way ahead of time.
Yeah, sure. That's very true.
So I would not hesitate to ask the asset question. You know, when you finally consolidate all your assets and put everything together into a retirement account, you know, what kind of numbers are we talking about? And that's it. I mean, you just ask, right? And they tell you it's going to be $5 million, and you go, "Good, okay, that'll work."
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be $500,000. Then you say, "Well, you know, I'm happy to help you guys and connect you to the right person,
because right.
you're wonderful people, and you deserve to have somebody of high quality, and that's my job to connect people."
Sure.
Okay, so you're not really saying no to them. You're just saying, right. You know, I'm not the right guy for you.
Yeah, and I did that with a referral I got a couple weeks ago, actually from the realtor, to a young realtor on his team, who I do believe is going places, but it turns out she has about 60,000 saved, and she wants to get some advice on what to do. She's 26, and way outside of the range of what I'm looking for.
Right.
But when I spoke with her, I did explain to her that I'd be happy to meet with her, but it wouldn't necessarily be me that would be her financial advisor. And especially because she's like family to this guy, the realtor that I'm friendly with. I didn't want to just turn her away.
He should know, that your minimum is $2.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Not 50,000. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, and I think that brings up a good point in terms of circling back to the realtor to make it clear that, I'm happy to meet with her as a favor because she's family, quote unquote. But she's way. I mean, my minimum is 1.25 million these days.
Well, absolutely. Your target minimum is $2.5 million, though. Remember that?
Exactly. Yeah.
So don't say your minimum is 1.25 because then they're going to bring you somebody with 750,000.
Yeah, that's a great point.
See, so you say $2.5 million, they're not going to bring you somebody with 750,000. They're going to bring you somebody with 1,750,000, and you're going to say, I'll make an exception and take them.
Right. That's a good point.
Because your absolute minimum is 1.25, but you're not going to take somebody with 750,000. So
right.
So you want to train all of your centers of influence to know that your target is, your ideal client is 250,000 and above. I mean,
right.
Excuse me, 2.5 million and above.
Okay. I knew what you meant.
Yeah. So that's the game. So keep practicing that.
Okay.
Okay. All right, guys.
Terrific. All right.
Have a great holiday. And
thank
we will we'll talk, I guess, in the new year now, right? In
2020. Absolutely. 2020.
Never thought it was never going to come, but here it is.
Yeah, here it is.
I know. All right.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, guys. Bye.